if I could. Okay, good morning, everyone. I apologize if my voice is a little sore. It's been a long Shabbos, but a really rewarding and amazing one. I had the great privilege of spending Shabbos with Rabbi Liebtag in Lincolnwood, and really a wonderful opportunity to see his community and to be exposed to the broader Chicago community. It's really a great honor to be here this morning. The YU Torah Mitzion Kollel in Chicago is probably one of the greatest prides of YU and of the yeshiva at YU. In particular, its leadership, Rabbi Brand, Rabbi Kraft, and Rabbi Matenki, who work tirelessly to bring Torah in such creative and engaging ways throughout the Chicago community. It is a incubator for future leaders of the Jewish people, and it is really a model that so many communities are looking to emulate. We were just on a conference call last week where we were discussing a new YU Kollel in a new community, and they were discussing all of the different ingredients that would help make it happen, and I had to restrain myself on the call because the one thing that they did not have was Rabbi Brand. Don't worry, I didn't recommend him. And it's so clear that his energy and his scholarship and his humility and his leadership and his passion and enthusiasm and really limitless energy is so much a part of what's made this a success. And it's really, our friendship goes back a number of years. We work together in junior NCSY. And it's really a great pleasure to be part of a program under his direction. We're in Or Torah, so I also, of course, have to acknowledge Rabbi Engel, with whom I was in Shir, Rabbi Rosenzweig Shir, many years ago. And we've also had a close friendship for many, many years. So it's really, really wonderful to be in a community that has so many connections to yeshiva, so many students from Chicago who attend Yeshiva University, and it's really just been a wonderful weekend, and it's really a privilege to be able to culminate the weekend here with you this morning. I'm going to try my best not to overlap with the previous speaker, who I understand talked about the psychological components of simcha and joy and challenge. My wife is a psychologist, which is helpful for me because this way I have built-in therapy. It was really the only way she could figure out how to live with me. But, you know, it's thank God. She's actually a child psychologist, and she works in a school. And, you know, it's funny. Last week, I was telling them in Lincolnwood, last week we had parent-teacher conferences. So I don't know, you know, when you sit the parent-teacher conferences, so, you know, the teachers mostly talk to the mothers. And the fathers, you know, they sort of look at them as kind of like an intern in this equation. You know, like you sort of say something and they look at you like, listen, why don't you let the adults handle this? You know, and you go back to, you know, your, you know. So last week I was doing a lot of traveling and I was exhausted and I came to conferences and, you know, I'm going through this whole thing and we come home and I have three daughters and a son and Chaim comes running up to me. How are parent-teacher conferences? How are parent-teacher conferences? I said, oh, Chaim, your teachers, they love you so much. They think you're so great. Your grades are great. Your behavior is great. Your engagement is great. Everything is wonderful. I'm so proud of you. And he looks up at me and he says, Abba, tonight was the girls' conferences. I just wondered how they were. So we all have what to do. We all have what to learn from the mental health professionals. And I am not one of them, although mental health is my field. And it's wonderful to be able to share the program this morning, and it's wonderful to be here. So we're going to talk about Purim. We know that we're all in the process of preparing for Purim. I don't know exactly what Purim looks like in Chicago, in Passaic, New Jersey, in Passaic Clifton, New Jersey. Everybody starts get going with the preparation of Shalach Manos. Shalach Manas always have to have a theme, you know, and my kids already know the Shalach Manas comes to the house and there are different bags, baked goods in this bag, candy in this bag, drinks in this bag, nuclear waste in this bag, and everybody knows that everything's all divided up and everybody gets dressed up and everybody's bringing it all around. My son was going through our closet this week to find his Purim costume, and he found a mask, a Star Wars mask. And I said to him, you can't use that mask. So he said to me, why can't I use the mask? So I said, there's a story behind the mask, behind the Purim mask. What's the story? The story was, my wife and I lived in Washington Heights for 7 years. Washington Heights is just like Chicago, only vertical. And in Washington Heights, we had a car that we generously donated to the community a number of times, as well as our stereo for people less fortunate than us. So, a couple windows, things that people need. It's like a Tomchei Shabbos program for the local community. So, there was one night where at 3 o'clock in the morning, we get a phone call, and I pick up the phone. I'm like all groggy and all disoriented. And on the other line is the New York Police Department. And there's a sergeant on the line, and he says to me, Mr. Glasser, I have good news. We have found your car. So I said to him, what are you talking about? I have my car. So he says, no, you don't. You don't have your car. I look out the window where I parked the car the night before, which in Washington Heights is pretty much like an Eitz HaTova, and there's no car there. Now, this car that we had, it was a Ford Taurus, which I used to call a Ford Saurus, right? It was a car that would not die. It would just, no matter what, Tauruses always bring you to the brink, and then, but they will not completely die. They just like, they live in this like hospice world of cars that you just cannot do anything. You can't move them along. So we hated this car. So what happened? So he says, you have to come down to the precinct to pick up some stuff. So I said, what do I have to come pick up? So he says to me, what happened was the Ganav stole the car and he drove the car to the Bronx. See, he had the car. He could have taken this car. But he didn't like this car. Nebuch, you know, it shakes a little bit. It's got smoke coming out. It had a Mordechai Ben David tape in the face. Right? Who needs this car? So he drove the car to a garage in the Bronx. He held up at gunpoint the guy's okay, the attendant, the parking attendant, and stole a BMW. So in other words, my car was not even worth the gun of keeping the car. It was the car, it was like, I'm not going to take the subway to the Bronx, right? It's like, you know, it's dangerous, right? You know, two buses, a subway, I'm not going to do that. So how am I going to get there? So I steal Glasser's car, and I leave it in the Bronx, and I hold up the guy. So he says to me, did you have a Star Wars mask in this car? And I said, yes, I did. It was for skits we were doing for NCSY and for Purim. He says to me, well, you have to come pick it up. It's been tagged as evidence. So I said, why? He said he wore the mask while he was holding up the parking attendant, this Purim Star Wars mask. So I kept it because it had a nostalgic, you know, Baruch Hashem, the car was Baruch Dayan Emes eventually, but the mask I kept, but I wouldn't let my son wear it because I felt like, you know, God knows what went on in that mask. So Purim's a time we try to get ourselves in a little bit more of a relaxing mood, an exciting mood. It's a chag of enthusiasm. And what's interesting is sometimes in the exuberance that characterizes our manifestation of the feelings of Purim, we tend to forget that Purim brought us to the precipice of total national destruction and the terror and the fear that gripped the Jewish people at that moment. So I want to begin this morning by asking a number of questions. Let's look at the first source. The first source is the Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar says the following: Al kein karu layomim ha'ele Purim. The holiday is called Purim. Al shem ha'pur. Why is it called Purim? Because Haman conducted a lottery. Haman conducted a pur. So says the Bnei Yisachar. He asks the following question: Meharoi lasei slave. It is significant to consider the following. Ma nishtana. Don't get worried, ladies. But ma nishtana. Kriyas shem hamoed azeh mikol ashemos shakol amoed. Asks the Bnei Yisachar. What is the difference between the way in which Chazal, the way in which the Megillah frames the name of this holiday in contrast to all other holidays. What does that mean? Because Shebechol Halelos, right? What's the difference? Shehashemos Shekol HaMoadim. The name of all of the holidays, Nikroim Ashem HaNes. They are called, their name, their identity emanates from the victorious, miraculous, supernatural component of the experience. Hainu Chag HaPesach, right? We call it Chag HaPesach. So Al Shem HaPischov HaDiluk, because God passed over, right, all of the Jewish houses and only killed the firstborns of the Egyptian homes. And that's why we call it Pesach, because of something that wonderful happened, because of something miraculous that happened. V'chein HaShem HaNikro B'Torah Chag HaMatzos. Ashlo Hispik B'Tzeikam Sh'avoseinu V'Ochlu Matzos. Matzos also. We call it Chag HaMatzos because Matzos capture the elation of the Jewish people in their accelerated experience of leaving Mitzrayim. Alkein Karash, we know we have to cook matzos very, very fast. I have a friend who is the mashkiach at Streitz Matzah Factory in the Lower East Side. I think they just closed it. And I remember we were learning, we were chavrusas, and he told me that one day Martha Stewart, you know Martha Stewart, Shemel Tiferes, Martha Stewart was coming and she wanted to do a show about matzah. So she comes to the factory to make this whole show about matzah, and she's filming all these different components. And the mashkiach told her, how long is this segment going to air? So she says, the segment with commercials is going to be a half hour. So he says to her, you can't show it for a half hour, because people are going to think that our matzahs don't bake in 18 minutes. You can't show this segment for a half hour. So he was trying to tell her she shouldn't show the commercials. Anyway, that didn't work. So Chag HaMatzos is because of the matzah. Chag HaSukkos. Ki HaSukkos Oshavti is B'nei Yisrael. Chag HaSukkos because we lived in a sukkah. God protected us. His holiness enveloped us. There was an impenetrable sense of protection of the Jewish people. V'cheinu me'aroi shehoya ha-moed, sheyeh ha-moed nikra al shem ha-yeshua. V'hanes. So the name of a holiday should capture its Yeshua. Yom HaKippurim is the day that we all introspect and we try to transform ourselves and we go through a day. But the day is called, it's a scary day, but it's called Yom HaKippurim. The day of atonement. The outcome, which is positive, which is good. Rosh Hashanah. So Yom HaDin. So where does Purim come from? Al Shem HaYeshua V'Anes V'Lo Al Shem HaShibud V'Yisur. This is his question. Why is it that Purim's name comes from the aspect of the Purim experience that was tragic, that was potentially catastrophic? That's not how Jews celebrate the victory of a miracle. That's question number one. Question number two. At the end of the Megillah, so the Megillah gives us, you know, sometimes when you see a film on an airplane, obviously, sometimes when you see a film, right? At the end of the film, it tells you the whole story of the film. And at the end of the film, it tells you what happens to the different personalities afterwards. So-and-so went on to become president of the bank. So-and-so went on to, you know, marry so-and-so, so-and-so. And it kind of fills out the rest of the story. So the Megillah ends the same way. The Megillah has a certain cinematic feel to it, right? And the Megillah ends the same way. The Megillah tells us, this is the very end of the Megillah. Look at the last two lines. Ki Mordechai HaYehudi. So what happens to Mordechai, one of the heroes of the story? Mishna leMelech HaChashverosh. He becomes an assistant to Melech HaChashverosh. V'gadol LaYehudim. And he becomes great amongst the Jewish people. V'ratzoi liRov Echav. And he becomes accepted, he becomes embraced by most of his brothers. Madai uparas doresh tov le'amo v'dover shalom l'chol zaro. Everyone lives happily ever after. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in source number 3, picks up on a small nuance in this pasuk of the Megillah. And that is that the Megillah says the Gemara, Ki Mordechai HaYehudi Mishna l'melech HaChashverosh, V'gadol HaYehudim V'ratzoi lirov v'chav. Says the Gemara, wait a second. What do you mean, Ratzui Lirovechov? What do you mean he was accepted by most of the Jewish people? Lirovechov Vilo Lecholechov. Says the Gemara, he was accepted by most of the Jewish people, but not by all of the Jewish people. he's good. He's very, very good. He's one of the Gedolim. Not my Gedolim. I like this guy, right? Not everybody. So says the Ibn Ezra, what was wrong with Mordechai? Mordechai is the man. Mordechai is the one that saves the Jewish people. He's the one that orchestrates having Esther positioned in exactly the right place. He gives her the encouragement. He gives her the framework within which she can advocate for the future of the Jewish people. Mordechai is one of the survivors of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. How can you not hold of Mordechai? Mordechai, he's got three art scroll books about him. One of them are true. He's like Mordechai. He's the man. How can you not hold of Mordechai? So says the Gemara, says the Ibn Ezra, ki ein yechol, this should be in the Smicha program, this line, ki ein yecholes be'adam liratzos hakol. Nobody, anywhere, can make everyone happy. Says the Ibn Ezra, ba'avur kinazachim. After all, many of them stood around and said, Mordechai, I mean, he's very good, but he speaks a little too long. Mordechai, he's very good, a little to the right. Mordechai, he's very good. You know, like, and everybody's got their thing. So, lirovecha velo licholechav. Rashi says, what was the problem with Mordechai? Says Rashi, melamed shepirshu mimenu mikzah Sanhedrin, lefi shenase korav l'malchus, v'yabotel l'talmudo. You know why the members of the Sanhedrin had a problem with Mordechai? Because he got involved in politics. He got involved, and some of the Mefarshim and the Megillah say that the Jews would come to Mordechai to intervene when they had an issue that they wanted government assistance with. This is after the whole story of Purim. And Mordechai was selective about when he intervened and when he didn't intervene, right? In Passaic, New Jersey, when I first moved there, so they asked me to come do training for the local police department to talk to them about what it means to be a religious Jew. So they had two people. They had a rabbi speak about Jews, and they had a priest speak about non-Jews, speak about the Christian community. The priest happened to live next door to me. I lived next door to a priest. I remember when I moved in, he reintroduced himself. My name is Reverend McKinney. My name is Rabbi Glasser. I said to him, we should find an imam and walk into a bar. Just before him, right? So he says to me, so we all go to the cops, and I speak for 20 minutes about Orthodox Jews. Now, Passaic is a very concentrated community. It's a small area with, you know, a couple thousand Orthodox families. So I explain everything about Shabbos, where you stop people on Shabbos, they can't sign, they can't do this, they can't do that. Guy raises his hand in the back. He says, Rabbi, can I ask you a question based on your explanation of the Shabbat? I said, sure. He said, why is it forbidden on the Shabbat to walk on the sidewalk? You know, that's when it dawned on me. Like, many other religions have, you know, they go to church, they go to mosques, they go to... You don't see any of them, right, walking home in the middle of the street. You know? So, okay. So we tried to work around that. And then he raised his hand and he said to me, we have someone in our shul who's a very prominent politician. And everyone in the community knows him. And he's on the city council. And he's on the state legislature. A very, very prominent politician in New Jersey. So one of them raises the hand and he says to me, I don't pull over Orthodox Jews anymore. I said, well, thank you. So I said, why not? And he says to me, it's not worth it. Says, you pull over an Orthodox Jew, invariably behind him comes four other cars. They all get out. They all come over to you. He didn't do it. They were like 3 miles away when this happened. They're all telling you they know this politician who knows your boss's boss's boss. They're going to get you fired and court-martialed and reassigned to destitute. It's just not worth it. Just break your taillights and we're done, right? It's not easy to advocate on behalf of the Jewish people. It's not easy to be able to walk the halls of the Persian government and embody the agenda of Am Yisrael and be able to deal with all of the different challenges that come up. So Mordechai is not somebody that enjoyed universal acceptance, universal support. So the second question is, what is it that Mordechai did? What is the heart of what Mordechai did that ultimately resulted in losing so much of her? Mordechai was the hero of this story. Mordechai was one of, I mean, Esther is the central hero of the story. But it's through Mordechai's support. He was the one. Lech Knosis Kol HaYehudim. He's the one that got up at the Asifa and got everyone together and said, we're going to daven and we're going to pray and we're going to change the course of Jewish history and we're going to save the Jewish people. Mordechai is the iconic figure that brings everything together. Mordechai is the one that overhears the conversation of Bigson and Seresh and reports it to Esther, who tells it to Ahasuerus, and ultimately that's what results in Mordechai's ascent over Haman and the parties begin. It all traces back to Mordechai's intervention. How is it possible that only weeks after the Purim story's salvation, we discover that there is a lack of universal support for Mordechai? That's the second question. Third question. Look at the Gemara in source number 6. The Gemara in source number 6 discusses our situation this year. Says the Gemara, we'll start on the second line. Bechol shana v'shana. Here's the problem. Every year, usually, there's how many Adars? One Adar. This year, there's how many Adars? Two Adars, right? I was born Rosh Chodesh Adar. My parents always tell me I was born a joke, right? It's the last session, right? Maybe I was born joy and pain. I don't know. Whatever, right? So says the Gemara, we have two Adars. So which Adar do we celebrate Purim in? Which Adar do we celebrate Purim in? So we've become habituated to the fact that obviously we celebrate it in the second Adar. But the Gemara has an argument about this. This is not so simple. The Gemara says, after all, Bechol Shana Vishana, every single year, the Megillah says, you celebrate Purim every single year, which means Bechol Shana Vishana, which the Gemara interprets to mean that there's a pattern to the celebration of Purim. There has to be some sort of cyclical consistency to the celebration of Purim. So says the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi Sovar, Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi held, Bechol Shana Vishana, what does it mean every single year? Ma kol shana vishana adar hasomuch l'shvat, just like every single year, when do we celebrate Purim? In the Adar, when there's one Adar, it's the Adar that's closer to the month of Shvat. Afkan Adar hasomuch l'shvat. So when there are two Adars, we should celebrate it in the Adar closer to Shvat, which is Adar Rishon. Says the Gemara, v'Rav Shimon ben Gamliel sovar. So what does Rav Shimon Gamliel say? He says, no. Bechol shana vishana, Ma kol shana vishana acha adar hasamuch l'nisan. Just like every year we celebrate Purim in the Adar that's closer to Nisan, afkan adar hasamuch l'nisan. This when there's two Adars, it should be adar samuch l'nisan. And then the Gemara analyzes this machlokas. And the Gemara asks, what's the underlying reason for each one? Can't just be because each argument about the pattern is legitimate, right? If the issue is keeping holding the pattern, so the pattern, it's legitimate to argue the pattern is closer to Shvat. It's legitimate to argue the pattern is closer to Nisan. So they can't be arguing about the pattern. What's compelling one to choose the first one over the second one and vice versa? So says the Gemara. Bishlam Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi. I understand Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi. Mistaber taima de'ein mavirin ala mitzvos. Says Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi, we have a halachic principle that ein mavirin ala mitzvos, which means when a mitzvah presents itself as an opportunity for engagement, we are required to engage. We are required to do that mitzvah at that moment. We cannot procrastinate the fulfillment of mitzvos. Ein mavirin ala mitzvos. Zrizin makdim in la mitzvah. We wake up in the morning, we have to do a bris milah. There are other things that we want to do that day, other mitzvos you have to do that day. Ein mavirin ala mitzvos. You have to do the mitzvah that comes to your hands. So Ela Rav Shimon ben Gamliel my taima. So what's the reason of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? So then it should be an Adar Rishon. We have an Adar, we have a Purim, we have a day, it's closer to Shvat, let's go. So says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, no. My taima, Amar Rav Tavi, taima de Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, masmech ge'ula le'ge'ula adif. You know why we put it in the second Adar, which is what we do? Because we want to juxtapose the experience of Purim, which celebrates a redemption of sorts, to the experience of Pesach, which celebrates the ultimate redemption, the paradigmatic redemption. Mismach ge'ula le'ge'ula. Question number 3. Ein mavirin ala mitzvos is a bona fide principled halachic concept. Ein mavirin ala mitzvos. Mismach geula legeula. This concept of juxtaposing it to Pesach, it's a nice idea. It's homiletical. It's midrashic. It's thematic. It's nice. It's a nice idea. This is a geula. That's a geula. So much geula. Reshit smichas geula. So much. Like, well, let's have a lot of geula. Who wouldn't want to have more geula? Who wouldn't want to have more redemption? It's a nice idea. But why would we, in Psak Halacha, which is what we do, we celebrate Purim in the second Adar, why would we supersede a fundamental halachic principle by ascribing to an idea that is a nice idea? Why would we choose mismach geula legeula over ein mavirin ala mitzvos? Question number three. And since we're in the season of four questions, we'll ask one more question. This question comes from the Bereishis Rabba. The Medrash tells us the following. Rabbi Akiva, right? Rabbi Akiva is the greatest of the great, right? He's everything. The Torah Shebaal Peh, Rabbi Akiva. There's even a Yeshiva Boys Choir song, Amma, right? Like there's, Rabbi Akiva is amazing. Imagine if you had a Kol Yom Rishon and the speaker was Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva comes in. Rabbi Brand can do it. I'm telling you. He can do it. He can definitely convince you that someone is Rabbi Akiva. Right? Absolutely, no question. Rabbi Akiva comes, Haya Yoshe Vidorish. And he gets up to speak. And you imagine how people would be hanging on every word. It's Rabbi Akiva. He gets up to speak. Vahatzibur. And the congregation, Misnamnim. What does that mean? They're falling asleep. Now, this has never happened in my shul. Right? It's an amazing thing. When you're the speaker in a shul, I won't speak about your shul, but in my shul, when you're speaking in a shul, so, you know, after a number of years, I've been in my shul for 11 years, you learn everyone's sermon disposition. And you learn, like who's very focused and who's kind of relaxed. And certain people, chadesh yameinu kekedem, it's like a Tylenol PM. Boom, they're out. Done, finished. Straight from alertness to REM sleep. Mamish, nothing. Right? Some people fight it, right? So they're like, you know, and as a rabbi, you kind of play with these people. You know, like you inflect your voice. You know, they're like, and you're going back and forth. But eventually, they're gone. They're mamish. They're gone. It's over. And it's an amazing phenomenon. You could do anything in this room right now. Anything. You could set off a fire alarm. You could explode something. Anything can happen. And these people will be completely asleep. The only thing that will ever awaken them is two words. Yiskadav, yiskadash. What? Everybody's up. They should put it on phones as an alarm. It's mamish, right? Everybody's up. So Rabbi Akiva is speaking. Vahatzibur misnamnim, and everyone's falling asleep. So bikesh la'orarum. So Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake everyone up. So Omar, he said, ma. So he tried to throw out something that would kind of throw everyone off, make the drasha more interesting. Ma ra sa Esther. So he asks Rabbi Akiva to the congregation, ma ra sa Esther. What did Esther see? Shetim lo chal sheva ve'esri mumeya medina. What did Esther see that her destiny was going to be to rule over 127 provinces? Ela tavo Esther, says Rabbi Akiva. Esther comes. Shehaisa basbita shel Sara. Esther is a descendant of Sara Imenu. Shehaisa meya ve'esrim v'sheva shanim. Sara lives for 127 years. V'simlo chal meya ve'esrim v'sheva medinos. And corresponding to Esther's 127 years, Sarah's 127 years, Esther is going to rule over 127 Medinos. And everyone wakes up, and everyone loves the rest of the shir. That's when he says, "Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha," Zekla gadol batora, and everyone's so excited, and Rabbi Akiva's back in play, and he's invited back the next week, and he's on top of his game. And the question is, what in the world do these two things have to do with each other? Why is Purim named after the most challenging part of the story? Why is Mordechai, somebody, a figure that loses support of the Jewish people? What challenges Mordechai's ultimate authority over the Jewish people? Why do we celebrate Purim in the Adar closer to Pesach? And what is the connection between Esther and the world of Sarah? So what is the life of Sarah really about? What do we mean when we say that Sarah lived for 127 years? So Rashi makes a fascinating statement. The Torah tells us, "Vayu chaye Sarah meyos shana ve'esrim shana v'sheva shanim shnei chaye Sarah." That Sarah lived for 127 years. These are the years of Sarah. So look at Rashi in source number 9, not the first Rashi. We're very familiar with that Rashi. That 100 is like 27, is like 7, everything is great. Says Rashi, Shnei Chaye Sarah. Why does the Torah recapitulate this phrase and tell us that these are the years of Sarah? Kulon Shavin Litova. Because they were all together wonderful years. The Torah wants to tell you, Shnei Chaye Sarah, this was a life. Sarah lived a life that was wonderful, that was Kulon Shavin Litova. She lived a great life. So turn to the next source, on source number 10. And the Netziv, in talking about the difference between Avram and Sarah relative to their levels of Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh, the Netziv wonders, Sarah lived a great life? I mean, her husband comes home. He says, right, her husband comes home. She married a really nice guy. He was in business, merchandising idols, right? How's business? Thank God. Everything is wonderful, right? Everything is great, right? All of a sudden, Sarah comes home. Avram comes home and he says, you know what, honey? I know I told you to be an accountant. I know I told you to be a lawyer. I know I told you. But you know what? Let's start a religion, honey, right? Let's start a religion. Let's really put ourselves out there. And this guy goes from place to place. The Rambam describes this in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. This Avram Avinu goes from place to place, rallying people, preaching the values and ideals of ethical monotheism. He cultivates a relationship with God, which is saturated with conversations of prophecy. The two of them ultimately build this extremely challenging life, this open home, this open tent that is constantly visited by anybody and everybody you could ever imagine. Right? I don't know what happens here in Chicago, but in Passaic, New Jersey, they come from all over, right? They knock at the door with the cellophane. Right? Can you imagine what went on in Avram's home? Then they finally can't have a child, and Yishmael is born. Yishmael's a problem. They have to get rid of Yishmael. Along the way, Avimelech kidnaps Sarah. She has to deal with Avimelech. Yitzchak is born. They finally have a ray of light, a glimmer of hope. There's going to be a future to their family. And her husband, the tzaddik, the religion builder, the one who's told her that they're doing all of this because there's a promise from God to create this great legacy, this great nation that will inherit this wonderful land. And all of a sudden she discovers that one day her husband woke up early in the morning and schlepped her beautiful, idle, wonderful son to the top of a mountain to execute him, to kill him? This is Sarah's life? This is Kulon Shavin Litova? This is what it means to have a good life? To be abducted? To have a child that you, in the house that you have to banish from the home? To nearly lose your son? To have to deal with all of the vicissitudes of life in the context of public scrutiny and public display? This is Kulon Shavin Litova? So what distinguished Sarah is that Sarah looked at the landscape of her life, and instead of allowing the challenge of her life to define her, instead of allowing the challenges and the sufferings and the failures and the difficulties to overwhelm and overcome her, instead of allowing that to be what determined her facial, you know, expressions as she woke up in the morning, instead of allowing Nebuch, me, I, ve, instead of that becoming the crux, instead of that being Sarah's rallying cry, Sarah developed a categorical commitment to the disposition of Simcha. Sarah was able to look at every challenge in her life, Vikulon, not Litova, Vikulon Shavin Litova. Sarah was able to construe every experience as a platform for growth. Sarah was able to take every time that there was any imaginable challenge, any imaginable tragedy, and place it into the context of the larger ambitions that she and Avram had to build a people. Sarah understood that building the Jewish people was not one big Shabbaton. Sarah understood that life is not always this, you know, I was a regional director of NCSY for many years. And we used to have kids over to our house for Shabbos. And it was amazing. Kids would come over for Shabbos. We'd have a whole Shabbos. And then Shabbos would end. And we'd make Havdalah. And the kids would be standing there looking at me like, what's wrong with you? And I said to them, you know that in our real life, we don't have a band when we make Havdalah. We don't stand here and tell a Holocaust story and then make Havdalah. We make Havdalah. And then we fight about who's going to clean out the cholin pot. That's what it means to be Orthodox. Right? This is, right? This is reality. Sarah understood reality. Sarah understood that the avoda, that the work of a Jew, is to find the opportunity. That yes, everyone in life is given unimaginable tests. Everyone in life has a moment where they look at their world and they feel completely consumed by it. But the ambition of Sarah Imenu is kulon shavim letova. And that's why, says the Nitziv, she was in a higher level of Ruach HaKodesh than Avraham. Because Avraham would emotionally capitulate to what was going on around him. And Sarah was able to retain that disposition and that anchor of simcha to everything going on. I don't know if he got to it, but I saw in the Marim Makomos from the Shir before, he quoted the famous Gemara in Brachos, that we make the bracha of Dayana Emes, Besimcha. And the question is, oh, what are you making a Diana Emes Besimcha? This we don't teach in Smicha, right? You don't bring the family into a room and say, look, now we're going to take a Kriya of a Diana Emes. Let me just begin with a joke, right? No, you don't do that, right? That would be terrible. That would be horrific. What do you mean Besimcha? What?
Kriya is terrible.
The whole experience is terrible. What do you mean Besimcha? What does the Gemara mean? What the Gemara means is not that the circumstances Besimcha. Likablinhu b'simcha. You're able to internalize the circumstance into a larger landscape of life that still holds on to the optimism and hope of simcha. Likablinhu, you accept the Dayan HaEmes within simcha. It doesn't completely destroy you. And that was the world of Sarah, and that was the world of Esther. Esther's turning point in the Megillah is when it seems like everything is going wrong. Here she is, she's forfeited everything. Talk about issues in Shidduchim, right? Imagine after living with Achashverosh, we put her on YU Connects. Like, what, what's going to be? They'll meet at the airport, you know. So, what's your background? Well, I lived with a Persian king. Where do you go with that, right? Where do you go with that? She gives up everything. She gives up everything. And she sees the whole thing falling apart around her. Everything. The Jewish people about to be destroyed, and the only one who has the ear of the king, and she doesn't know what to do, and she doesn't have confidence in herself. She looks around, and everything's terrible. And Haman is literally in control of the strings of the entire future of the Jewish people. And Mordechai says to her, Lech knos es kol ha-yuhudim. She says to Mordechai, Lech knos es kol ha-yuhudim. Go gather all of the Jews. Because Mordechai says to her, Umi yodea im ka'es lazos yigad l'malchus. Sarah, this is your moment. This is your moment of likablinhu b'simcha. This is your moment of that no matter what's going on, to use it as an opportunity to accomplish something great. And the uniqueness of the story of Purim, and what makes it different than every other story of victory of the Jewish people, is that when the whole story's over, everything's done, the Jews are saved, their sons are hanged, whatever, right? And the Jews have their revenge, everything's over. You know where the Jews are when it's all over? they're still in exile. It is a redemption that occurs in the context of galus. The whole story from beginning to end, it's not all's well that ends well. It doesn't finish with, and then Mashiach came, right? Like we like to finish all the shir. No, you hear that sound? Oh, we'll all be in Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's not how it ends. It ends with the Jewish people in exile. It's a fascinating thing if you look at the Shmona Esrei. So you know we say the brachos, we daven for wisdom and we daven for forgiveness and we daven for tshuva and we daven for health. And in that section, we have a bracha where we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Goal Yisrael. You should redeem the Jewish people. Okay. Asks Rashi, why is that bracha with all those other brachos? Where does that bracha belong? At the end. With Bonei Yerushalayim, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua, Shema Koleinu. That's when we daven for redemption. Why are we davening for redemption? Well, we're also asking for wisdom and health and prosperity. That bracha should be part of the end of the section. There's a momentum building here, from the personal to the communal to the national to the extent. There's a momentum building. Put Goal Yisrael at the end, and you know what the reason is? Because Goal Yisrael is not a bracha that Golus should end. The bracha that Golus should end is Bonei Yerushalayim, is Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. The bracha of Goal Yisrael is that the circumstance that I'm facing now, the challenge that I'm facing now, should resolve itself within the framework of whatever reality I'm in. It's not asking for an alternative reality. It's asking for a geula, for a redemption, within the context of challenge. And that's the uniqueness of Purim. The uniqueness of Purim is the ability to find redemption, the ability to find joy, the ability to find opportunity in the context of an unredeemed world, where things don't end up happily ever after. Because you know what? Life is more Purim than it is anything else. There are ups, there are downs, there are challenges, there are failures, there are victories. But at the end of the day, it's not all magically going away. And Purim is about recognizing that redemption is not only a story for Matzos and Pesach and Sukkos and Shavuos. That redemption is a story for the poor itself. The ability to experience that connection, that aspiration, that positivity, that optimism, that hope from the poor. Purim al-pi apur, because there's always another poor. Because yeah, we resolved this story. Haman's gone. But there'll be another Haman. There'll be another poor. There'll be another challenge. But Purim, we have the ability to take those challenges and harness them to achieve greatness. And that's why Purim is juxtaposed to Pesach. Because before you can appreciate the grandeur of Yetzias Mitzrayim in Jewish life, you have to be able to internalize the challenges of the Jewish people. You know, when someone wants to convert, so they come to the Beit Din and they say, I want to become part of the Jewish people. So the Talmud tells us in Yevamos that the first thing you do is you tell them, you don't want to be part of the Jewish people. Why? You tell them, have you opened up a newspaper? Have you gone online? Do you see what we deal with? Do you see the attacks and the difficulties and the malignments and the BDS and all of the... Do you see this? You want to be... Dechufim, Devuyim, Desuf... The Gemara talks about... The Klal Yisrael, they're oppressed, they're hurt, they're downtrodden, they're challenged. Who would want to be part of this? You really want to be part of this? This is what we tell them. So Salvechik would ask, this is what you tell somebody? They come to you, they say, I want to be part of the Jewish people, and you tell them how terrible everything is. So he says the following, who's the quintessential ger in Tanakh? Rus. Rus says to Naomi, two things. She says to Naomi, I want to be, amecha mi, And I want to be Elokayich Elokai. Elokayich Elokai. I want my God to be your God. I want your God to be my God. Says Rav Elokayich Elokai, that's about the part of our Jewish identity that connects and commits to the values and expectations of Torah. And if someone wants to join the Jewish people, they have to accept that as part of the reality of their life. But there's another dimension to Jewish identity, and that is to be part of the Jewish story. It's not just Elokayich Elokai. It's Ameich Ami. It's being part of our story. And you know what it means to be part of our story? It doesn't just mean the disproportionate number of Nobel Prizes that we've won. It doesn't just mean the victory of the Six-Day War. It doesn't just mean the world of aspiration and the schools we've built and the shuls we've built and the success we've had. To be part of the Jewish story means to be part of the Purim also. To be part of the challenge, to be part of the difficulty. And to see how the Jewish people, more than any nation in the history of the world, has used those challenges as the bedrock, as the foundation for astronomical growth and revolution. To be able to create a world, to be able to create a society, to look at what the post-Holocaust generation accomplished. To look at people who talk about lahashmid, laharog, laabed, the ultimate Purim, and to be able to come and to build the state of Israel and to build Torah in America and around the world and all these institutions and all of these, and this generation, this heroic generation, that's what it means to have a Purim. We found the state of Israel, we're still in exile. We're racist, smichas kulasenu, we're getting there, we're trying, we're aspiring, we're working on it, but we're still in exile, we don't have a Mashiach, we don't have a Messiah, we don't have a temple. But we discover the potential that exists in a world of exile. And this, for our generation, more than any other. Yes, we experience great challenge in Israel, we experience great challenge of anti-Semitism around the world, we experience burdening economic challenge in securing the vitality and the future of our community. Yes, these are all difficult things. There's a pur to all these things. But the Purim of Am Yisrael is the recognition that all of these challenges can become the catalyst for some of the greatest accomplishments and achievements imaginable. And that is the story of Purim. And that's why the Rambam writes that Purim, over any other holiday, all the other holidays, we don't really know what this means. All the other holidays will recess into oblivion when Mashiach comes. Obviously, there will still be Pesach programs, but there won't be Pesach. It'll be a post-messianic age of buffet that is hard for us to understand. But there's one holiday that doesn't go away, and that is the holiday of Purim. Because that perspective, that anything in life can become the source, the kernel, the spark for something greater. That Sara Imenu Kulan Shavin Latova, that juxtaposition of the Purim to the Chayav Adam Liros Etz Atzmo Ke'ilu Hu Yotzei Mitzrayim, to the Matchil Begnus, to the knowing that slavery itself also has the capacity to create a great nation. That recognition that Mordechai, even though he achieved such greatness, to some extent by his refusal to bow down to Haman, he instigated this whole thing. The Torah, the Megillah tells us, and it's interpreted by the Mefarshim, that Mordechai could have taken other routes around the palace. He went past Haman every single day to get a rise out of him because he saw the Jewish people eat at that party. And he saw the complacency that had set in and the comfort that had set in, that the Jewish people had made it, that they achieved the Persian dream. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and they were invited to the White House Hanukkah party. They're there, they're mamish, all the gates are open, we can do it, we're there, we're safe, everything's wonderful. And Mordechai watched what happened. He watched how their identity eroded. And so to some extent, he created a crisis so that the Jewish people would recognize that things are not as good as they seem, but that's not a bad thing. You don't encapsulate yourself from reality. You confront it, you face it, and you grow from it. And therefore, by definition, he could not possibly have achieved universal popularity. He was much as responsible for the problem as he was for the solution. But what Mordechai did was he brought the Jewish people to a place where they can engage the exile experience in a healthy way, where they could recognize their priorities and where they could cultivate a universal commitment to their Jewish identity. And this is our avodah for Purim, to look at our whole life and to realize, Adelo Yoda, Ben Arar Haman, Ben Baruch Mordechai. What's an Arar Haman? What's a Baruch Mordechai? It's not so clear. What looks like an Arar Haman might be a Baruch Mordechai. What looks like a Baruch Mordechai might be an Arar Haman. V'napochu, everything's all mixed up. Because the world is mixed up. Because things aren't so simple. And things aren't so easy. But kulan shavim l'tova. We can all summon the courage and the insight and the perspective and the ambition and the optimism and the hope to make greatness out of every Purim of life. Have a wonderful and Chag Sameach.